This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawera Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Otago, Dunedin, and I am joined from Otago Christchurch, Seoul, by Mawera Karatai. Kia ora, Mawera.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. There was a mixed bag on the Maori wards.
There was. It was quite interesting, but... like I just talked to, do you remember we interviewed Sam from It's in the Ballot?
Yep.
Yeah, I just talked to him on his election show a little while ago, and he said the same thing, and I said that it is going to take time for that kind of change. That kind of change will take time, and it might take a couple of cracks at it. And the fact that we have got this many now who have said yes to Māori wards means we no longer have to work to get them. They're done. I love that. And so we've got less to worry about next time. But then change of government, we will make a new petition and we will have the law changed again, and then another change of government, they'll try and do another, you know, it's just going to be a couple of cycles.
But we'll get there.
But gosh, Sam, there's a lot to celebrate in the result that we got. And, you know, like in the Eastern Bay of Plenty, which is traditionally one of the lowest ever voter returns, we doubled our Māori returns. That is outstanding.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And who are we introducing today?
It is my great pleasure to introduce another one of our amazing exchange students, Mawera Karatai. Welcome, hi. Mawera. It is so lovely to have you with us today.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm very happy to be here.
Mawera, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Austria. On the countryside, in a small town. And yeah, the small town is surrounded by forests, by lakes, by mountains. So similar to New Zealand, except the ocean. Yeah, I grew up in the small town with my two parents and my three siblings in a house. And yeah, I went to school there. Before going to our neighboring village or town to continue with my education. And then I moved to Vienna for my studies. And yeah, I did my bachelor degree there. And now I'm currently doing my master's in marketing, also in Vienna.
What did you do your undergrad in?
I did my undergrad in business and economics. And I also did a focus there on marketing and also in HR. But yeah, during my studies, I noticed that I'm more interested in marketing than in HR. And then I did a gap year between my bachelor's and my master's and worked in a Swiss company for a year in the marketing department. And yeah, then I knew quite fast that that's what I want to do.
What did you find that you liked about marketing?
I like the creativity. So I like to yeah, be creative. And I also like to work on a product. So that's also the direction I want to go. So I want to go to like go into the fast moving consumer goods direction to work on products and yeah.
So you've come here on exchange, and from all the things that you were offered, you've picked a course on sustainability. What appealed about that?
Back at home in my master's, we don't really have a lot of sustainability courses. I think now this semester they do have a lot of electives, and I think now they can choose some sustainability courses, but in the first two semesters we didn't have the opportunity to do that. So yeah, I thought that's something I do want to go a little more into the topic. Yeah, because I think it's very important also for marketing and to combine both of these, to combine sustainability with marketing is, yeah, I think that's very interesting. That's why I chose this topic.
From what you've learned over the past semester, is there anything that you wish that you had learned earlier on in your undergrad, maybe as part of your marketing degree?
I think especially the task doing the podcast was very eye-opening, or like, yeah, I learned a lot doing that. Doing an interview, because we don't really do a lot of interviews, or didn't do a lot of interviews in my past studies, and I think that really helped to get more practice context, not only learning about the theory, but also get a lot of practical insights. I feel like the interview alone was already very, very interesting. And then also cutting the podcast was also something I didn't do before. Yeah, and now the interview as well. And being part of a published podcast is also something I haven't done yet. So yeah, I think the whole task was something I think would have been very nice to, yeah, it's something I would love to already done in my bachelor's or master's.
Let's take the first of your music choices. Let's have Peter Bjorn with Young Folks. Why this one?
It's part of one of my favorite TV shows, and I also like that it's like a very, very happy song, and it's just very light and makes me feel good. And yeah, it reminds me of the one of my favorite TV shows. So that's why, yeah, that's why I chose this song.
Really enthusiastic young person, and you're got a really great positive attitude, and you're great to be around. I can tell that from how, you know, observing you in the class. We don't get to be like that unless we have really substantial role models in our lives. Who have been your role models, and what have they modeled for you?
I would say my role models are my parents. Very cliche, but I think my parents are my role models. I feel like they worked really hard, and they always tried to give me and my three siblings all the opportunities we could think of. And I really appreciate that. And it's something I admire so much about them. And they also motivate me and my siblings to keep growing, to keep trying new things. That's also why they supported me to do my semester abroad here, but still admiring and appreciating what I have. And I think that's something they taught me and my three siblings. Yeah.
When you go off into your working life, after you finish school and you're starting to work, I can see that leadership will just be a natural thing for you. What do you think you will model? How will you be a role model? What will you model for the people that you lead?
I would probably roll with my positive spirit. And also my easygoing attitude, I think. And usually I'm not a very stressed person. I'm even though I have a lot of things and tasks to do, I'm still trying to be positive and trying to not get overwhelmed with all the tasks. And I think that's something which at least my previous leaders I had appreciated about me. So I think that's something I would probably be good in when I would be in a leadership position.
I think that's awesome. So speaking of leadership, one of your outputs for this semester has been to interview someone who's a leader who embodies those good leadership qualities. Will you tell us about the person that you interviewed and why you chose them?
Yes. So I interviewed the COO, so one of the representatives of a Swiss chocolate brand, which is called Maestrani. And the interviewee is Sebastian. He's also my father. And I feel like he was the perfect match because, as we all know, the chocolate industry has, or at least producing chocolate has a huge supply chain, and it's very, the sustainability is a topic which is very important for the company itself, and also for, which is a topic which also is very important for the industry. And that's why I thought he would be the perfect interviewee for this task. That's why I chose him.
Perfect. Let's listen to it now.
Chocolate. A treat we all know and love. But behind every bar lies a complex global journey. One begins on cocoa farms in West Africa and ends on our supermarket shelves around the world. But the journey isn't always sweet. Cocoa production faces major challenges: deforestation, poverty wages, and even child labor. At the same time, companies and farmers are working to find solutions through ethical farming practices, farmer cooperatives, and certification schemes that aim to make cocoa more sustainable. My name is Maria, and I'm an exchange student from Austria, currently spending a semester at the University of Otago in New Zealand. As part of my studies, I'm exploring a contemporary issue in sustainable business. And what better example than chocolate? Something so close to all, or at least to most of us. In today's episode, we'll uncover what it really takes to create chocolate that's both delicious and sustainable. Together, we'll look at insights from academic research, current industry developments, and a conversation with a Swiss chocolate company known for its strong commitment to sustainability.
To set the stage, let's look at a recent study by Krumbiegel and Tilly from 2024, which examines sustainable practices in cocoa production. The researchers highlight two key approaches: certification schemes and farmer cooperatives. Certification schemes such as Fairtrade and Rainforest Alliance help ensure cocoa is produced under fair social and environmental standards, including fair wages, safe working conditions, and environmentally friendly farming practices. When implemented effectively, these certifications can reduce risks like deforestation and child labor while also improving farmers' incomes. Farmer cooperatives, on the other hand, empower local communities to manage production collectively, access resources, and negotiate better prices. They also encourage the adoption of sustainable practices, as farmers share knowledge, resources, and incentives. Of course, there are challenges. Certifications can be costly and difficult for some farmers to achieve, and the success of cooperatives depends heavily on local governance and support from buyers. This highlights that sustainable cocoa requires both global oversight and active local participation. In short, certifications set the standards, cooperatives empower farmers, and together they can make cocoa production more sustainable. Though, it's not simple. Companies must actively manage these systems to create a meaningful impact. Now that we've explored the academic perspective, what does this look like in the real world? A recent Reuters article from August 2024 highlights that despite certifications, serious issues such as deforestation, child labor, and low wages continue to threaten cocoa supply chains. These challenges show that simply meeting certification standards is not enough. Real progress requires coordinated efforts from governments, NGOs and companies to support ethical practices and sustainable farming. On the positive side, food technology covered Whittakers, which has responded proactively to global cocoa supply challenges with new packaging and sustainability-focused initiatives. Even in the face of rising cocoa prices, the company has prioritized transparency, ethical sourcing, and reducing environmental impact. So while academic research gives us the framework to understand what should be done, news reports highlight the ongoing tension between ideal practices and real-world challenges. This makes me wonder, how are Swiss chocolate companies in a country famously known as the home of chocolate addressing these complex challenges? Now to bring this topic to Switzerland, I'm joined by Sebastian, the CEO of Maestrani, a Swiss chocolate company known for its strong focus on sustainability. We're going to dive into how the global challenges we've been talking about actually play out in real business. Sebastian, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Maria. Thanks for inviting me. I'm glad to be here.
To start on a lighter note, what or where is your happy place? Where do you feel most at ease or inspired?
Well, I actually have a couple of happy places. The most important one is definitely home. That's where I can recharge most quickly after stressful working days and demanding business trips. On weekends, I love spending time gardening or going on long walks with good company. These things really help me to reset. But I also get inspired by longer breaks, whether it is a beach holiday, a city trip, skiing or hiking in the mountains. And interestingly, after those breaks, I'm always genuinely happy to come back to another important place, my workplace. For me, it's not just a job. It's a place of joy and challenges, and I feel lucky to work with such amazing people and teams day by day.
I love that. It's clear your personal and professional world really connects. And before we get into the topic of sustainability, I'd love for your listeners, or for our listeners, to get to know you a little bit better. How did you get to where you are today? What was your journey like to becoming COO at Maestrani?
After completing my studies in food engineering at the University of Life Sciences in Vienna, I started my working career at Kraft Foods in Germany. I spent 2 years there as a trainee at their biggest chocolate factory, rotating through different departments. After that, I took on more responsibility in production management, and eventually I became a deputy plant manager. And after some 8 years, I then had the opportunity to take on the position of a plant director at the beverage manufacturer Rauch Fruit Juices in Austria. I was responsible for production, technology, and logistics at the Rauch Group's largest factory, which at that time was exclusively bottling Red Bull cans for the global market. This was an incredibly dynamic development with an annual growth rate of 20 to 25%. After nearly 10 years in the beverage industry, my career brought me back into the world of chocolate. I joined Maestrani Swiss Chocolates as a head of R&D, quality management, and business development with a clear mission to optimize processes and to grow the company. Over the past 13 years, we have managed to double sales, and I was eventually appointed COO to the executive board by the board of directors. Looking back, it's been a journey full of challenges, but also great achievements, and I'm truly proud to have been part of shaping it.
Wow, that's quite a journey. It really shows how each step prepared you for the role you're in today. And thinking about your path, I'm curious, was there a particular moment in your life or career that really shaped your views on sustainability? How have those views evolved over time?
I actually come from an agricultural and forestry background, and I even completed my education in that field, graduating from a high school for agriculture. It was there that I first learned the classic principle of sustainability in forestry. You should never take more wood from a forest than can naturally grow back over time. This simple, very logical approach, thinking in generations rather than short-term gains, has really stuck with me. It's similar to how a family business or a farming community operates. The goal is always to preserve values and resources for the future rather than living off what you deplete. That mindset has fascinated me ever since, and it's something I carry into my work day by day.
That's really fascinating. And with that in mind, I'm curious, why do you think sustainability is especially important in the chocolate industry today?
Well, sustainability in the chocolate industry is more important than ever because cocoa production faces serious environmental and social challenges. In the countries of origins, this means improving conditions on cocoa farms through practices like agroforestry, preventing deforestation, and tackling child labor. But it's not just about the farms. We have to look at the entire value chain. That includes reducing CO2 emissions, using renewable energy in chocolate production, and sourcing raw materials locally whenever possible, like milk and sugar. Building long-term partnerships with suppliers and customers is also key to making sustainable practices effective and lasting. Consumers play a critical role as well. By choosing chocolate with fair trade or organic labels and paying attention to manufacturer information, people can support ethical practices and help drive the changes. Today, sustainability isn't optional. It's essential for protecting communities.
Wow, that really highlights why sustainability is so crucial today. It ties in closely with what I found in my research. A 2024 study by Krumbiegel and Tilly shows that sustainable cocoa production depends heavily on certification schemes and farmer cooperatives. It's not just about meeting standards, it's about empowering farmers and creating lasting environmental and social impact. So building on that, I'd love to hear more about Maestrani specifically. How do you ensure ethical sourcing of cocoa, and how are farmer cooperatives or partnerships involved in practice?
Our approach is to work with the right partners across the entire value chain to create meaningful impact. One example is a product line we developed with a major German retailer and a Dutch cocoa processor using organic cocoa from Sierra Leone, one of the poorest countries in the world. Together with our cocoa processor, the retailer, Fairtrade Germany, and the Fairtrade organization Africa, we designed a project funded by both the retailer and the German Society for Development Aid. It included direct investments in schools, improvements in agricultural practices, and initiatives to promote women's involvement in cocoa processing cooperatives. The result is a Sierra Leone single origin chocolate line under the DM Bio label, distributed by DM, the largest drugstore chain in Europe, across several European countries. We even visited the Kono district in eastern Sierra Leone to get an idea of the cooperative's working methods and, of course, the traceability of the cocoa beans. We are also pursuing similar projects with customers in Latin American regions such as Peru, Bolivia, and the Dominican Republic, always aiming to create long-term positive impact for both farmers and the environment.
Oh, that's a great example of how partnerships can create real impact. Building on that, I'm curious about certifications. Does Maestrani rely on labels like Fairtrade or Rainforest Alliance? And what makes those the right choice for your company?
In 2022, we launched our clean label initiative at Maestrani called All Natural. As part of this commitment, we only use cocoa that meets the highest fair trade standard, Max Havelaar. We also avoid palm oil and rely solely on natural ingredients. On top of that, more than 50% of our products are certified organic, reflecting our ongoing focus on sustainability and transparency.
Your commitment to ethical sourcing and initiatives like All Natural are truly impressive. Yet, even with those efforts, broader challenges persist in the cocoa industry. A recent Reuters report from 2024 highlights that risks like child labor, deforestation, and environmental pressures remain significant. From your perspective, what are the biggest challenges in maintaining a sustainable cocoa supply chain today?
Climate change is already one of the biggest challenges today, and it will continue to be in the future. Cocoa growing regions have suffered from years of mismanagement, but more recently, they have been faced with issues like droughts, unusual weather patterns, and plant diseases. These factors have weakened crop resilience, and harvests even declined for several consecutive years, which is reflected in recent dramatic price fluctuations. We have essentially been in crisis mode for almost 2 years, but our focus remains on being a reliable partner for our suppliers in cocoa-producing countries. We are committed to supporting them, helping to secure and even increase their living incomes, and ensuring the long-term sustainability of the supply chain.
It's clear that supporting sustainable cocoa goes far beyond the factory. It's about partnering with farmers and helping secure their livelihoods despite climate and economic challenges. For our listeners, what's one simple action they can take in their daily lives to support sustainability, whether through the chocolate they buy or other choices?
When making a purchase, think about how your choice can help prevent exploitation, reduce environmental harm, and avoid unnecessary waste. Look for products with labels like organic or fair trade. Small decisions like these can collectively make a big difference and help us create a better, more sustainable world.
That's an excellent and very actionable takeaway. Thank you so much, Sebastian, again, for sharing your insights and giving us such a genuine look into what sustainability truly means in the chocolate industry.
Thank you for having interest in what we do and what our impact is. Thank you.
Looking back at my conversation with Sebastian, there are a few key lessons that really stand out. First, sustainability starts with people and partnerships. Real change begins on the ground. Supporting farmers through cooperatives and long-term projects, like Maestrani's work in Sierra Leone, not only empowers local communities, but also builds the foundation for more ethical and resilient supply chains. Second, certifications and initiatives play an important role, but they're not the full solution. Programs like Fairtrade, Max Havila, and organic labels set important standards and raise awareness. Yet, as Sebastian highlighted, challenges such as climate change, plant diseases, and deforestation remain pressing issues that certifications alone cannot solve. Third, every choice we make as consumers matters. From checking for certifications to reducing food waste and supporting companies that take sustainability seriously, each of us has the ability to influence the system in a positive way. Together, Sebastian's insights and the academic perspective from Krumbiegel and Tilly remind us that sustainability is not just a single initiative. It's a system-wide effort. Farmers, companies, and consumers all have a role to play, and only by working together can we create meaningful, lasting impact in the chocolate industry. And that's a reminder we can all carry with us next time we reach for a bar of chocolate. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. A very special thanks to Sebastian from Maestrani for sharing his experiences and offering such an authentic look into the realities behind the journey of sustainable chocolate. And of course, thank you for listening and joining me on this journey. I hope it gave you some new insights into what really goes into making chocolate both delicious and responsible. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend, maybe while enjoying your favorite sustainable chocolate bar. Until next time, I'm Maria, and this was a podcast about sustainability in the chocolate industry.
Maria, that was a really great interview. What was your biggest takeaway from it?
I think the biggest takeaway for me was that sustainability is really about the people. And also when I talked to the interviewee, I realized that there are a lot of people who are involved in making something as simple as a chocolate bar. But there are farmers included, then there are the companies, or at least the company, the Swiss company included, and then it goes to the consumer. So there are a lot of people included in the supply chain, and also in the supply chain. And for me, it also kind of gives me hope that there are so many people involved, because it means that everyone can contribute to do something good, even if it's something small for each person or for each person involved. In the end, it's probably going to be something bigger than just a small thing. So, yeah.
I'm at a conference, at a climate change conference in Christchurch at the moment, and today we heard from some people who were talking about how the growing of the cocoa beans and also coffee beans, the traditional places they've grown, they no longer can grow them. So do you think that that there's a reason to be worried there about the ability of people to make a living?
I do think it depends a lot on the companies and also the certificates they are working with, because the certificates are usually working with the farmers in the countries. And with what I heard from the interviewee, if you choose the certificates wisely, they usually try to make it possible to grow cocoa over a long period of time. So it's not that it's like fields and fields of cocoa beans. It's usually a lot of small farmers, and maybe they only have 20 cocoa trees. And then it's like a mixed farming or mixed planting. So they not only grow cocoa, but they also grow a lot of different plants. And I think that's the most important part for growing cocoa, that it's not like, or in growing basically anything. I think it's important to not grow only or plant only one plant on the soil, but a lot of different ones. And I think that's important. And I think then it can work to grow cocoa over a longer period of time. And I think these certificates are making sure that this is possible.
It's a good approach, isn't it? Where you spread the risk, because if there was like a disease that impacted on the trees, while that's being resolved, the farmers are still able to make a living with the other products that they have. And it makes a more consistent income, and it means that when things start to change, it's not the end of the world for them.
Yeah.
Is that being driven by the responsible cocoa or chocolate industry, or is that just naturally how those farmers are managing their livelihoods, do you think?
Can you repeat that question again?
So the diverse nature of their income streams, all the different things that they're farming, instead of just like, we grow cocoa beans, mm-hmm. is it been a conscious choice to have a diverse income stream by having other products that you're growing by the farmers themselves, or is that being driven by the responsible chocolate industry?
That's a good question, but I think the certificates kind of push the farmers to grow more than only one thing, especially if it's like a lot of small farmers. And at least Maestrani works with certificates. For example, I think one is called Fair Trade Max Havila, which is like the highest possible fair trade certificate. And I think they are making sure that the farmers are not only dependent on one income stream, but more. And also that they don't only grow cocoa, but more than that.
That is awesome.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We're talking with Maria Orsel. Maria, in your interview with Sebastian, I particularly liked a couple of the things that he said. A complex global journey, but a journey that's not always sweet. I think that was actually your line. I liked that line. And then you went on to be talking about delicious and sustainable. And I wondered if that was an opportunity for us to think about how we might market the idea that those two things should be the same thing. How might we connect those two things more strongly?
It's probably good to, at least for me, I mean, I'm going to work in like the marketing department, so probably is something I would need to consider on how to market sustainable chocolate. I do think that it is. I mean, I'm not sure if it's like something every company can achieve and promote, especially like the biggest or the big chocolate companies. But at least for smaller ones, which are focusing on producing sustainable chocolate, I do think that it's very important for them to actively promote that they are focusing on sustainability, but because in the end, the consumer is making the difference because they choose the sustainable chocolate instead of the non-sustainable one. And how could you make that, or how could you promote that? I mean, probably you should focus on showing all the certificates which are showing that it is sustainable, because I feel like a lot of consumers nowadays don't just believe that it's sustainable because a lot of greenwashing is or was happening in the last couple of years. So I do think certificates kind of are making sure that people also believe what the companies are promoting. So yeah, as I said, I think showing the certificates, making sure consumers really know that it is sustainable, is making the biggest difference probably in how to promote the sustainable chocolate.
I really liked the thinking in generations that Sebastian was able to take from forestry into food production and sustainability in general. What's your go-to definition of sustainability?
I do think the one he mentioned is one I also learned in school. Not in regards of the forestry, but that you shouldn't use resources which cannot grow back naturally. So not in a forestry or yeah, in a forestry context, but in general, that's something I also learned in school. Yeah, and also that sustainability is not only about nature, it's also about the people and also about future generations in general. Yeah, I think these are the things I learned in school about sustainability, and that's also my go-to definition of it.
Let's take the second of your music choices. Let's have Billy Joel, Vienna. Why this one?
I picked Vienna because I do think the lyrics are very good. It's about taking time, finding balance in life. Plus, I'm also doing my master's in Vienna, so it feels extra special and kind of personal. And I also think that I'm currently in a stage in life which is very fast and yeah, fast-paced, and the song reminds me to slow down, to enjoy the stage I'm in, and yeah, appreciate what is currently happening in my life.
Slow down, you crazy child. You're so ambitious for a juvenile. But then if you're so smart, tell me why are you still so afraid? Where's the fire? What's the hurry about? You better cool it off before you burn it out. You got so much to do and only so many hours in a day. Hey. But you know that when the truth is told, that you can get what you want or you can just get old. You're gonna kick off before you even get halfway through. Ooh, when will you realize Vienna waits for you? Slow down, you're doing fine. You can't be everything you wanna be before your time. Although it's so romantic on the borderline tonight, tonight. Too bad, but it's the life you lead. You're so ahead of yourself that you forgot what you need. Though you could see when you're wrong, you know you can't always see when you're right. You're right. You got your passion, you got your pride, but don't you know that only fools are satisfied? Dream on, but don't imagine they'll all come true. Ooh, when will you realize Vienna waits for you? Child, and take the phone off the hook and disappear for a while. It's all right, you can't afford to lose a day or two. Ooh, when will you realize Vienna waits for you? And you know that when the truth is told, that you can get what you want, or you can just get old. You're gonna kick off before you even get halfway through. Ooh, why don't you realize Vienna waits for you? When will you realize Vienna waits for you?
I have some questions to end the show, and not very much time. What is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
Probably my 1 year internship I did in Switzerland, because they gave me a lot of responsibility in the marketing department, and I got the opportunity to work on designing limited editions or seasonal products, for example, for Christmas and Easter. And they're now, or were last year, on the market. And I think that was pretty cool to see your own products on the shelves. And the same was for brand management. I also helped with a lot of different campaigns. And they are also, they also published these campaigns, I think it was a year ago. So I also got the opportunity to work on the campaigns. And then a few months later, I saw them on a lot of billboards across Switzerland. And that was also very, very cool. So I think that's probably my biggest success, at least in work the last couple of years. I would probably say in personal life, the biggest success is doing my exchange abroad here. I think it was out of my comfort zone to go to New Zealand, which is the more or less end of the world, or the side of the world from Austria. So I think that was a personal success for me.
What's your superpower?
I think being very, being very chill, but not like in a lazy kind of chill, but in a very peaceful, easygoing kind of chill, especially in working and also personal life. And also trying to be as positive as possible. I think that's also something which a lot of people tell me sometimes, that that's something they admire about me. So I think that's also something I would count as my superpower.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
I would say to enjoy the stage you're currently in, and you're not gonna be as young as you are now. So do the things, travel, and yeah, just enjoy.
Good advice. Thank you. Dr. Karatai.
Thank you so much.
So, Maria, it has been joyful having you in the class. And as I said right in the beginning, and as other people have said to you, you are a force of positivity. And your enthusiasm is very contagious. It's been wonderful to have you with Thank us you. In Aotearoa. I'm so glad that you picked the University of Otago for your study. Thank you very much for your thoughtful podcast, for your classroom contribution, and for joining us tonight. We wish you all the best for the future. Kia ora.
Thank you so much.
We are going out to what do we do with a problem like Maria? Because Maria from Austria has never watched The Sound of Music.
She climbs a tree and scrapes her knee. Her dress has got a tear. She waltzes on her way to mass and whistles on the stair. And underneath her wimple, she has curlers in her hair. I've even heard her singing in the abbey. She's always late for chapel, but her penitence is real. She's always late for everything, except for every meal. I hate to have to say it, but I very firmly feel Maria's not an asset to the Abbey. I'd like to say a word in her behalf. Maria makes me laugh.
How do you solve a problem like Maria? How do you catch a cloud and pin it down?
How do you find a word that means Maria? A flippity gibbet, a will-o'-the-wisp,
a clown. Many a thing you know you'd like to tell her. Many a thing she ought to understand. But how do you make her stay and listen to all you say? How do you keep a wave upon the sand?
Oh, how do you solve a problem like Maria?
How do you hold a moonbeam in your hand?
When I'm with her, I'm confused, out of focus and bemused, and I never know exactly where I am.
Unpredictable as weather.
She's as flighty as a feather.
She's a darling.
She's a demon.
She's a lamb.
You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, which is brought to you by the University of Otago. We are broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. Today we were joined by Maria Orsall with her contribution of Coming Up for Air. With Maria Karatai, I'm Samuel Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Marty Wilde.
She ought to understand.
But how do you make her stay and listen to all you say?
How do you keep a wave upon the sand?
Oh, how you solve a problem like Maria?
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.